Hey there, and thank you for joining us tonight on the Designated Pundits. We got a lot to talk about. MLS, you know what to do. Okay, I don't even want, even the graphic messed up on that. I had no audio there. I don't know what's going on today, but match day 13 is complete. We have plenty of things to talk about in and around the league. Home teams went 5-1-7 last week, so our predictions were not the best. Was not our best week in the sports book lottery. But as we were saying before the show, I went back and I looked, where did I go wrong? And every pick I made, win or lose, is a pick I would have made again and presented the same information again. Mm-hmm. I would have done things. So, you know, right. we're going to turn the page on last week by talking about some news and notes that came up in this. But let's talk first about LAFC getting their new striker signed pen and paper today. What do you think about Giroud going to LAFC?
What do I think? I think we have to acknowledge Olivier Giroud is a very handsome man, and he is raising the appearance of that team significantly.
Just the hair alone, I'm jealous of.
It's just not fair for somebody to be that talented and that attractive, just the whole, you know, thing. But on a soccer level, this is a really, really good thing for LAFC. They really need somebody with this sort of experience and his sort of savviness and his abilities. He is a guy that can play link-up play. He's a guy that can score goals. I think in a lot of ways, they don't need him to be like the striker who competes for the Golden Boot. They need him to help get their wingers going. They need him to help like mentor and coach, you know, Bogus and stuff like that. So I think he is a great type of character and a great type of player for them to actually bring into this organization. I think it's a really good signing.
36 years old, 182 goals total in 335 professional matches. 335 professional 90s. That's kind of what I call a match. I just count up their 90s. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he's been a prolific goal scorer everywhere he's been. And we've seen how good Benteke is. I think that Giroud comes in with a lot of those same characteristics. He's going to be great in the air. And he's going to take some pressure off the wingers. You know, he's going to take some attention off of Buanga, out of Christian Oliveira, who had an amazing week this past week. So I think that is an absolutely fantastic signing for LAFC. I don't think it's going to take a long time to get him going. He's coming from Serie A. He's coming from Milan in Serie A. I think that, you know, his 14 goal season there is going to translate quite well to Major League Soccer quite soon.
Yeah, I think so. I think he's going to hit the ground running. I think he's going to improve their hold-up play. He's going to improve their target play. I totally agree. I don't think it's going to take him very long to get going at all. Very good signing for them.
So one of the players that I just kind of compared him to also had a fantastic week, and he made a cover artwork for this episode. That is Christian Benteke. Heads home with a 3-2 win at Atlanta. That is a pun intended because he scored three times with his head, had a fantastic performance, and got a road win for DC United. They were plus 350 underdogs in this matchup. Benteke himself, four of his five shots landed on target. There were some other contributors, but 39.7% possession, six of DC United's 15 shots landed on target for 2.7 expected goals. Great match for DC. Atlanta, still a team that I'm waiting to get going. I mean, Almada had a good game. He finally got his goal, but then Giakoumakis, one for five shots on target, 0.42 expected goals. Nothing from the wingers in this matchup. I'm really confused now about who Atlanta United is, but I'm not confused about who Christian Benteke is with those three head goals.
No, I there's no confusion whatsoever about DC United. I made the joke in our doc that it was Christian Benteke United, but that's kind of doing a disservice because Jared Strouda has two assists in this game. Mateus Klik has an assist and a really good game. This is a team that offensively knows what it is and what it wants to be. This is a team that offensively is actually performing at a pretty high level. DC is just a team that defensively is still figuring it out. They have some frailties. They're letting in too many goals. They're letting leads go. But that's kind of a different conversation. DC is still impressing us, even though DC is maybe not as high on the in the table as we might like. They're still impressing. It's Atlanta. I'm with you. I just even their goals this week, I just can't get behind them because it's from the penalty spot and it's a deflected own goal, like a really heavy deflect. You know, good cross, yeah, fine, but in the danger zone. But 9 times out of 10, that's the defender deals with that and that goes out for a corner. You know what I mean? These are not necessarily repeatable goals.
I agree. I don't know. I can't trust Atlanta, but at the same point, I know they're too good on paper to bet against them. They're going to have to go into like purgatory with Orlando, like a team that I can see it happening on paper. But this is the story. The story of the week is actually Benteke for DC United. And as Tom Bogert tweeted earlier today, I'm going to pull up this stat to show. Benteke leads Major League Soccer with 134 aerials won. The guy in second place has 54 aerials won. That is Kevin Long from Toronto. So that's more than double, almost triple. Here is the stat that kind of shows exactly where we are. 134 wins for Benteke, only 34 losses. That is fantastic. Rafael Navarro has been on his share of a few, but only converting half of his 48 shots. Then you have Kevin Long moving down the line. Sam Surridge, again, less than half. Lucas Bartlett, Hugo Kuipers, Petar Musa, I was actually a little surprised to see on the sheet. And then Duncan McGuire, who, of course, we would expect. So some very interesting stats there for Christian Benteke. Most aerials won in a single season over the last 7 years is Christian Benteke in 2023 with 241. The highest non-Benteke season total is 174. Benteke is almost up to that a third of the way into the season already.
He's going to shatter that. It's insane. The thing is, too, he's having a great season, and it's not just about him winning the ball in the air. His hold-up play has been really, really clean, really top-notch. The interchange that he has with the players around him has been really excellent. He is playing like, you know, the model of a DP right now. Huge credit to him because he looks like he's really enjoying himself. And huge credit to Troy Lesane and that DC United staff because they've got that team on the up.
Something interesting I'm looking to pick out Wednesday as DC United is hosting New York Red Bulls. Those stats were for offensive players. Sean Nealis and his brother Dylan Nealis are two of the best defenders in the air so far this season, like top 10 players in all of Major League Soccer in winning their duels. So I really want to see how that ends up this week. I think DC United, I think Benteke has got a little edge over those two guys, especially since Red Bull, as good as they are in the air, they just let Carlos Hill score off his head and the ball was like 4 feet off the ground. So got some tidying up to do Red Bull for this matchup, but it's definitely going to be interesting to see how that dynamic shifts.
Atlanta, by the way, this is an interesting fact. Atlanta have not won an ML game since March 31st. And their next game is against Cincinnati. So that's an away game for them, by the way. So they're traveling up to Cincinnati. So I don't think that's about to get better in a hurry.
Not great. Not great. Not great, Scott. Not great. But the good news is everyone has two chances this week. Think about midweek. So we did have a rough week betting, and we're going to review just a couple of those picks. We picked Vancouver on a long shot at plus 400. They got rolled over 3-0. I didn't expect it to be that bad, but when you take a plus 400, you kind of know there's a lot of risk involved. One of the places I didn't quite see, Nashville stumbling to Charlotte 1-0. Was not expecting that. I mean, who's Charlotte? Like the Road Warriors all of a sudden. Nashville's offense gave one of the worst performances of the week. And we got NYCFC punching up in Toronto, winning 3-2, definitely against my run of plays as far as bets. But we did make some money on Red Bull winning by at least one goal. They won by two, so that was a plus. And one of the shocking things that happened this week, Miami won 3-2, no shock at all. 4 goals in the first half. We bet on the second half to have more goals. Still not working out. So, yeah, it was a rough week in the sports book, but I support most of those picks just outright. So let's talk about some results that actually matter on the field for Major League Soccer clubs. And we're going to start with the Philadelphia. Their slump continues against Orlando in that matchup that we saw a little bit later. I'm trying to pull up my notes and I can't really find what I wrote here, but I'll go to what you said. Muriel finally gets his first goal.
You want me to go while you look up your notes? Because
I got him actually right now. Dude. Oh, that was just enough of a stumble to pull it up. Perfect. Orlando only had 39.5% of the ball. Four of their 13 shots were on target, but they had 1.4 expected goals. They won at plus 300, a heavy underdog on the week. Muriel, two goals and an assist. He contributed on all three goals for Orlando, and that's something that we haven't seen yet this season. He has been off the scoreboard. I do want to say on our Bet PR, on our Bet US show, someone's been calling in every week and asking when Muriel was going to score. I said he's going to score this past week, so I'm taking my own credit on that one. But yeah, Muriel looked fantastic, scored an absolute banger. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Maguire, who else adds a goal to make this a 2-3.
That's his fifth of the season, by the way. He's quietly having a good year, and a year that he shouldn't even be here. So credit his kind of mental resiliency to get back into it. A lot of players have a, you know, sophomore slump kind of thing. He's not. That's been good. He's been one of the few bright spots for this Orlando team. You hope that for their sake that this can be a little something to jumpstart them, to get them performing a little bit better. They are still 11th in the East. They're on 12 points. They're actually only like 2 points off a playoff spot right now. So hopefully there's enough sort of carrot there for them to pick it up a little bit and try and start making a little run in the East, make things interesting.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, we've talked about how talented Orlando is on paper, and this is a game where Facundo Torres didn't even contribute. You did have Nicolò Daro, zero of his three shots landed on target. So Orlando not having a heavy possession in this match, but definitely the more clinical side. Because if you look at the Philadelphia Union, they shot the ball 32 times, seven of those shots landed on target. They had a hefty 4.3 expected goals. And it was from the guys you would expect, Gazdag and Urah. Each three of their five shots landed on target. They both got goals. Same exact stat line for both players. You had McGlynn and Sullivan both 0 for 4. None of their four shots each landed on target. So Philadelphia Union absolutely peppering the net. 60.5% possession. Probably, you know, I don't want to say deserve to win, because I think you deserve what you put in the back of the net. But I would not have been shocked if, you know, a few more of those 32 shots found the back of the net. Orlando City doing a fantastic job of playing some catch up emergency defense.
Totally. I do think, though, that this just is another sort of chapter in the body of evidence of reasons to be concerned about Philadelphia this year, because they're not even getting the results that we think they should be getting based off of the way that they're playing. And I have been, you know, pretty vocal on here saying that they're not even playing that well. I think they should be playing better. They're like ninth in the East. They've got 14 points. I have concerns. They don't seem to be especially clinical in front of goal, as you just, you know, listed off a bunch of stats that they peppered goal, but couldn't, you know, put the ball away more than they did. And then their defense continues to just be leaky.
I don't understand that at all. I mean, I thought Philadelphia was one of the better defenses heading into the season. Mm-hmm. It has been just a complete turnaround. 19 goals scored, not that bad. 16 goals against, that's not good enough.
It's not good enough. And like, sometimes we look at total goals scored, and that tells a certain type of story. But what it lacks sometimes is context. Can you score the goals when the goals matter? And if you lose 3-2 all the time or whatever, like, your goal difference might look pretty good. You might have, you know, goals scored or whatever, but you're not getting the points. And that's the boat that Philadelphia's kind of been in. They've been in like 3-3 ties or 3-2 losses or whatever. They're scoring these goals that are like not counting for anything.
They're one of only four teams in the Eastern Conference with a positive goal differential.
Yeah. And what is it all for?
For a 3-5-2 record, apparently. Let's move on and talk about something a little more interesting, and that's the Seattle Sounders heading into Portland on Sunday afternoon. They were 2-4-5 heading in. They scored two goals, conceded one. Portland Timbers given up two every single week. It doesn't matter who they play. In this case, it's the Seattle Sounders. You saw Roldan and Rui Diaz each with a goal. Who else would it be? On the Portland side, you had Mora with his lone shot on goal. Evander, none of his two shots landed on target. He had a 0.09 expected goals scored. What a heck of a way to finish off a week. And the Seattle Sounders, I'm telling you, this is a better team on paper than we've seen. Again, second week in a row, we've watched Jordan Morris run past a guy, something we haven't seen in the first 10 weeks of the season. You have Raul Ruiz Diaz getting on the scoreboard. Love to see that. Christian Roldan, you know, continuing to play at a high level. And this defense, again, only allowing one goal. They were plus 160, which was just about a coin toss to start. Portland was at plus 150. So not a lot of heavy favoritism there on the Portland side. But guess what? Now Seattle Sounders ties them in points and has the tiebreaker, moves up to 11th place in the Western Conference. Doesn't sound so good, but, you know, it's a result.
It is a result. And they still have a lot of room to grow. Jordan Morris, yes, ran past somebody, but Jordan Morris only with one shot in this game and one chance created. So, you know, he's still not, you know, clicking with the rest of the offense. They're still missing something. You know, Pedro de la Vega cannot come back fast enough for this group. And honestly, the summer transfer window probably. But it's good that, you know, finally Roldan is contributing something. Seattle really cannot afford to depend on Ruiz Diaz all season.
This defense has only allowed 14 goals all season long. That would be second best in the Eastern Conference. I mean, they have an elite defense. Offense starts to click, we see what can happen. There are two wins and a draw in their last three, and they're moving right up the scoreboard here. I see the Seattle Sounders as one of those teams that's going to make a second half run, and I'm here for it. I'm going to make a lot of money off of them. They head into Salt Lake City this midweek match, so maybe pump the brakes on that. But they're definitely a team that I see playing good soccer in the very near.
Absolutely, teams playing good soccer and not getting results though. Portland's offense. Yeah. I mean, honestly, the Felipe Mora's goal in this game was beautiful. It was an absolute thing of beauty. Cabecita with the assist on it. Absolutely great. Portland's offense is legitimately good. Portland's defense is, I don't know, missing it, like on a milk carton somewhere. Have you seen that? But like,
they would be absolute last in goals allowed in the Eastern Conference, but the San Jose Earthquakes play in the West, so they're not quite there yet. But the San Jose Earthquakes are another team, two wins in a row, that I think is going to have a great start. Don't want to get too far off topic.
The Earthquakes are winning games right now, and Portland is not. As I recall, we had a chat earlier in the season about Portland, and we said, look, at some point, Phil Neville's new manager bump is going to wear off. And Portland is going to come kind of back to earth. And at some point, Phil Neville is going to have to coach this team through a crisis. And that's kind of what we're seeing now. This team has hit a point. They're not winning games. The offense isn't enough. They have to be good in other places. Phil Neville has to coach this team through this issue. And can he do it? And we on this show had been kind of skeptical of that. I very much still am. I suspect you are too.
Yeah, absolutely. And it comes down to what happened at the beginning of the season. Like, Phil Neville was hired after a huge controversy in Portland within the Timbers and the Thorns organization. No one wanted him anyway. No one's giving him the shadow of a doubt. Now, he had a 3-game losing streak. Before that, he had a 3-game draw streak. Before that, he had a 3-game losing streak. So, you know, 0-3-6 in his last 9 matches. He's going to be run out of town. Again, someone who the fans didn't want, and he had to have hit the ground running. He had a couple of early results that luster's worn off, and I don't see the Portland Timbers going anywhere. And it's surprising, because Phil Neville, you think that he would have their defense a little more organized than this, and we're just not seeing it. It's like when you know, you get like an offensive mastermind as the head coach, and like the offense doesn't get any better. Like, what are we doing here?
No, for real. And you look at this team. This Portland team has good players. They have good players in defense. They have good players in midfield. For me, it really is down to the coaching of this team that is not setting them up to be successful, that is not working and addressing the issues that are leading to this defense being, you know, exceptionally leaky week after week.
Part of it is like we're running a 4-2-3 back, even though it's, you know, it never working. Like, maybe try a 5-man back line, try some, you know, wing backs, try something new, because we're trying the same thing 12 times, getting the same result and scratching our head as to what's going on. Like, you need some changes. You got to mix it up a little. It's not my job that's on the line. You
know? Absolutely. Yeah. Phil Neville's got to get his coaching staff and start working on something different. But should we talk about another team that's in a little bit of a slump here?
Yeah,
Columbus,
go for
maybe.
It.
Columbus, maybe.
Absolutely.
FC Cincy 2-1 win at Columbus. This was kind of a surprise for me. Not because, you know, I'm not surprised that Cincy can beat anybody. Cincy's a good team. But Columbus, Columbus is like no win MLS play since March 16th.
It's been a long time. They have a streak. They lost a game, five draws, and then another loss. So it's it's a draw sandwich on loss bread there.
Yeah.
Spanning seven games.
And they've got some wins in CONCACAF. You know, they're obviously, you know, prioritizing the CONCACAF Champions Cup or whatever it's called. So, you know, it's not panic time for Columbus, but I think we're starting to see some tired, you know, tired legs, tired minds from that group.
Yeah, I don't know what the plan is really with them, to be honest. It's a little confusing. Like, they have Cucho. What's plan B? Because, like, Diego Rossi
hasn't really done
it. He's not doing it.
Which is weird, because when they got him, I was like, wow, what, that is an incredible signing. We saw what he was like at LAFC. And for this group in MLS play, he's anonymous.
854 minutes with two assists so far on the season. Cucho Hernandez leading with four goals in 727 minutes. After that, two each for Aiden Morris, Jason Russell Rowe. I mean, I look at this depth chart and it looks like they're kind of trying to do the same thing that isn't working for Dallas, where like they're not playing with pure wingers. They're playing like with three attackers in the center with Cucho, Rossi, and I guess it would be like Russell Rowe or Matan when he's healthy. I just don't know. Like, Inestroza's not been doing it. Just a lot of failures every step of the way for Columbus. And with a guy like Wilfred Nancy and with the team that they have here, an incredible home field advantage, you'd have to think that they would be in better shape. But Cincinnati was hot. They come in at +333, only have nine shots, six of them landed on target, 2.1 expected goals. Of course, who else? Acosta with the dagger there.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't understand it. Bupenza's hurt. Now you're starting Corey Baird and Nuya Kubo up top and you're winning games. Like this is unsustainable for me also. Just as much as Columbus is unsustainably cold, I think Cincinnati's got to be unsustainably hot. You know that like they're going into this offseason with a checklist of places they need to upgrade.
I think for sure Cincy is going into they're going into the summer transfer window. I think Cincy's looking for strikers. But in a lot of ways, it reminds me of Cincy of last year. I remember getting deep, deep into the year and looking up Brandon Vasquez's stats and realizing that he wasn't actually that consistently important to Cincy's success. The guy that's the most important, you know, piece to Cincy's success is Lucho Acosta. And he continues to show that. One goal, one assist in this game, six goals, six assists on the season. You know, that's insane. All they really have needed were forwards who could sometimes put the ball in the back of the net. And, you know, Corey Baird and Kubo, like, that's it. That's what they needed. They don't need those guys to be superstars because Lucho Acosta is carrying that load so consistently. And right now he looks like he's having the time of his life. But I mean, I kind of agree with you. If, you know, if Lucho has a bad day, if he gets marked out of a game, if he has a suspension or a little injury or something like that, misses some time, you know, then how does Cincy do it? That's where I'm like, that's unsustainable for Cincy.
I agree there.
Had his, you know, had his value.
And but, it's really, this back line has been fantastic, allowing only 10 goals so far this season. But they, FC Cincinnati's had a little easier of a schedule. You know, now they're going to face Atlanta and St. Louis City back to back. Then they head up Toronto, host Nashville, head to San Jose. Like, this could not be any easier of a 6-week stretch for FC Cincinnati. And that puts them well into the, you know, the end of June. So they just need to hold on for another month and a half against really, really low opponents, and then they need to rebuild because they finish off the season. They still play Inter Miami twice. Talk about only 10 goals allowed. Well, that's one of the reasons why Red Bull would have only 12 allowed if they weren't playing Inter Miami twice so far this season. And then they have, you know, a really rough stretch towards the end of the season, Cincinnati. So they need to stack as many wins as they can on this record now, because it does not get easier down.
No, it doesn't. But they are in a good, they're in a good place overall. They're like second in the supporter shield on 24 points. So if they can continue to stat pad some wins through this stretch and into the summer, and they can carry some momentum into those more difficult, you know, parts of their schedule, then all they need to do is maintain momentum. They don't even need to be, you know, especially brilliant. They just need to maintain momentum so that they enter the playoff picture in a good way, when they're playing well and feeling good.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, let's talk about one of the, let's finish up with a little San Jose Earthquake talk, a team that we've neglected far too often this season, and for good reason. They started out with a terrible stretch to start the season. They got themselves into a 2-1-8 hole. They are now 3-1-8, took a win on the road in Colorado. This is a game I really didn't want to bet because I do like the Colorado Rapids. Colorado had 60.6% possession. Six of their 14 shots landed on target with 1.7 expected goals. However, San Jose put three in the net, 39.4% possession. Only four of their 11 shots landed on target. Three of them landed in the back of the net. Espinoza, Lopez, and Pellegrini were the guys who put the ball away. And look, that's the three guys you want scoring, right? You got that's
the dream for San Jose fans.
Absolutely. You got the nephew of Maradona putting a goal in the back of the net. Seems to his arrival alone brought San Jose back on the map. San Jose is going to be underdogs for a lot this season, and I think they have a lot of winnable games. They're in Portland this week. I love that matchup. Then they face Orlando at home. I like that. They face Austin at home. I like that. There's a three-game stretch here where San Jose can actually put a little earth between them and the competition. And mm-hmm. then, they have another easy streak throughout the middle of the summer. So San Jose is right up there with Seattle, two teams that I think are better than the record shows, that are about to put a little nice streak together. Are you with me on the San Jose Quakes?
Yes and no. Yes, in the sense that I have, for a very long time, the San Jose Earthquakes have been bad, kind of bottom dwellers in the West. And I've said their roster is a lot more competitive than the results. I think they are missing a couple of pieces. I think they could use a really, really good striker, somebody to kind of work alongside, you know, Christian Espinoza and help carry that load. They really miss having somebody like Wando on the team. And then just the coaching for them has felt uninspired for a while. I'm not here to criticize anybody doing any job, but maybe just a little bit of freshness around the roster, you know, might help pick that up. I think that San Jose will start to win some games, especially at home. They can be a good home team. When they face other struggling teams, they're going to pick up those points. They are a team who will never fail, though, to shock you by disappointing you. They are going to go on the road to teams you think they should beat, and they're going to drop those. And that's kind of who they are and who they have been for a while now. I don't see that part of it changing. So I think they're going to pick up some points. They're not going to finish, you know, necessarily dead last unless Portland magically turns it around. But I don't see them putting that much distance between them and the competition.
I'll tell you why. Hernan Lopez, absolute baller at the number 10 position. We've already seen that. And we've seen how he elevates everyone around him. Him and Christian Espinoza are two top tier players in Major League Soccer. They should be up in that elite ranking from what I see already. They have enough midfield depth. This defense is supposed to be good with Rodriguez in the back. They've been running with Yarbrough he's like their sixth string goalie. It's
true. They could really use some goalkeeping.
That's getting better. Amal Pellegrino's been stepping up and playing good soccer. I mean, I just think that they are one piece away. Jeremy Abobasi is not good enough in the year of the Lord 2024 to be putting 15 goals in the back of the net, which is what they need from their striker. But they've already showed, look, they went out and got Hernan Lopez in the middle of a non-transfer window. You know, they are looking, eyes are out. And I think that they know exactly what they need to do. And I don't think Quakes are going to hesitate. You know, I think just 2 years ago, they were like selling in between ownership and an off season. Remember, they missed an entire off season of transfers because they couldn't have anyone sign the checks for the players.
That's right.
This team's going to turn around, man. I think that they are more ambitious than we think. They have a lot of pride. They're one of the, you know, the OG teams there in California. Forget the name of the state there for a second. Maybe not yet. Maybe it's too soon, but this is a team that I have circled, you know, for a midsummer sweep.
Yeah, I think you're right. They need to make a couple of moves, a couple of moves to just to freshen things up a little bit, get some real energy and belief into that group, and then they're going to be capable of it. But they've got some really good baseline pieces.
I agree on all counts there. Now, I have one last question before you finish up. Tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern time, you can catch me on BetUS Major League Soccer channel. And when I was putting my bets in, I have a couple things that are kind of sneaky good. Nashville is hosting Toronto without Bernadeschi with the red card. I have under 2.5 goals in that matchup, Nashville, Toronto. Like, let's lock that in already at almost even money. I was looking at RSL over Seattle, and I want you to tell me why RSL is going to win that matchup on Wednesday night.
Ooh, okay. I won't hedge the bets because you asked me to tell you why they're going to win that game. They're going to win that game because RSL's defense has very quietly been among the very best defenses in the entire league. They are not going to cheaply give up many goals. It took LAFC kind of all 90 minutes of poking, prodding to finally wear down and get, you know, something that looked like a mistake. So RSL is not going to walk in and just gift Seattle anything. And then offensively, Chicho Arango having an MVP caliber year on 11 goals for the season, keeping pace with all the big boys. And he is that guy that can go get goals. And he's got good supporting players around him, good supporting players who can test the defense, who can push, who can pull, who can make life uncomfortable. And so even though Seattle's defense is, they are good, they are one of the elites, it is too much to keep out, you know, a group like that forever.
That's RSL schedule right here, and I would be a very happy man if I were you. Hosting Seattle Sounders should be a win. Then next weekend, they're hosting the Colorado Rapids. They head to FC Dallas, head to Seattle Sounders, then host Austin, head to Montreal. I mean, that's six winnable games in a row in the middle of the season for RSL. I absolutely think they're going to lock it in. Plus 100, even money at home against Seattle midweek. I think we're buying the Seattle bump. I may have single-handedly on two different podcasts bumped the numbers for Seattle betting on my own. I don't know what's going on there, but thank you so much for your great analysis tonight, Scott. And thank you everyone for checking in. We will be live on Thursday as we're going to kind of recap another week and kind of give predictions for the another weekend. It's kind of what we do. I guess there's two midweek games in the month of May, so it's going to be a little hectic around here, but we're here to talk about it. We're here to bring you some great picks. Scott, have a great night, and thank you everyone for checking in on The Designated.